Pilgrim's Progress, Updated Modern English, the Second Stage. Then Christian prepared to go back to the way. Evangelist kissed him and encouraged him with a smile. Godspeed, Christian. Christian hurried on his way and spoke to no one as he walked. Even if someone asked him a question, he was careful not to give them an answer. Instead, he went on like one walking on forbidden ground. He just didn't feel safe yet. In fact, he wouldn't think himself safe until he returned to the way which he had left to follow worldly wise men's counsel. Finally, he reached a gate. Over it a sign read, "Knock, and it shall be opened to you." He knocked with urgency more than once or twice. "May I now enter here?" he asked. "Will he within open to wretched me, even though I have been an undeserving rebel? If you let me in, I won't fail to sing his lasting praise." At last a serious-looking man named Goodwill came to the gate. "Who is there?" he asked. "What do you want?" Christian hung his head. "It is me, a poor burdened sinner. I come from the city of destruction, but am going to Mount Zion, so I may be delivered from the wrath to come. I have been told, sir, that this gate leads to my destination. Are you willing to let me enter?" "I am willing with all my heart," he said. With that, he opened the gate. Christian moved to step through the gate, and to his surprise, Goodwill tugged him forward and hurried him inside. Christian stared at him in disbelief and straightened his jacket and asked, "What's the meaning of this?" A little distance from this gate there is erected a strong castle, of which Beelzebub is the captain, Goodwill said. "From that castle both he and those with him shoot arrows at those who come up to this gate. It is their hope that those who arrive at this gate may die before they have the chance to enter in." Christian pressed his lips into a thin line as he considered the man's words. He said, "I rejoice and tremble," for he was both relieved and thankful for the favor shown him. Once he was inside the gate, Goodwill asked him, "Who directed you here?" "Evangelist told me to come here to the gate and to knock, as I did. And he told me that you, sir," he nodded toward Goodwill, "would tell me what I must do. An open door is set before you, and no man can shut it." Christian let out a sigh of relief. "Now I begin to reap the benefits of the risks I took and the dangers I faced in getting here." Goodwill glanced to see if any others had come with Christian. "How is it that you came alone?" Christian placed his hands on his hips, arms akimbo, and shrugged. "None of my neighbors saw the danger as I did." "Did any of them know of your decision to leave destruction to come this way?" Christian nodded. "Yes. My wife and children knew what I was doing. When they wouldn't come with me, I started out without them. They called after me to turn back. Along with them, some of my neighbors also stood crying and calling after me to return home. But I put my fingers in my ears and so came on my way without them." Goodwill's brow furrowed. "Didn't any of them follow you and try to persuade you to go back?" "Yes. A couple of neighbors did come along at the start. Both Obstinate and Pliable walked with me at the beginning. But when they saw that they couldn't get me to change my mind, Obstinate went back home complaining and denouncing me. Pliable came with me for a little ways." "And why isn't he here?" "Truthfully, we pressed on together until we came to the Slough of Despond, into which we both suddenly fell. My neighbor Pliable became so discouraged by that experience that he refused to go any further. After struggling for a time in the miry bog, he finally reached a side nearest to his house and climbed out. He told me I should possess the brave country alone on his behalf, and he went in the direction of Obstinate while I proceeded to this gate." Goodwill shook his head with regret. "How sad for poor Pliable. You mean to say he has such little appreciation for the celestial glory to come that he didn't consider it worth running the few risks and difficulties necessary to obtain it? Christian nodded. It is true. What I've told you about Pliable is the sad truth. Christian hung his head again. But to tell you the truth, I'm really no different from him myself. If the truth be told, he went back to his own house, but I also turned aside to go in the way of death, when I believed the persuasive carnal arguments of one worldly wise man. Oh, did that man prey upon you? Did he deceive you by offering you an easy way to rid yourself of your burden by the hands of Mr. Legality? They are both cheats. Do you mean to say you followed his advice? Christian looked up to him sheepishly and nodded. I went as far as I dared to locate Mr. Legality until I came to the mountain that stands by his house. I feared it would fall upon my head, so when I saw it, I was forced to stop. It is just as well you escaped it, or it may have dashed you to pieces, Goodwill said. That mountain has been the death of many and will be the death of many more. To tell you the truth, I don't know what would have become of me there at the mountain if it hadn't been for Evangelist's arrival just about the time I was feeling sorry for myself and rather depressed. It was by God's mercy that he came to me again, because if he hadn't, I would never have come here to this place. He made a wide, sweeping gesture with his arm, taken in the area on that side of the gate. But I have come now, unworthy as I am, and more deserving of death by that mountain than I am of being here talking with my Lord. Oh, what an undeserved favor it is for me to gain entrance here. We don't object to any entering here, no matter what they have done in the past before they come here. In no way are they cast out. Therefore, my good Christian, come and walk with me a little distance, and I will teach you about the way you must go. Look ahead of us. Do you see this narrow way? That is the way you must go. It was established by the patriarchs, prophets, Christ, and his apostles. The way is straight. Follow it, for this is the way you must go. Straight? Christian asked. You mean to tell me there are no turns or bends? No detours in the way by which a stranger may lose his way? Oh, yes. There are many side paths that connect to this narrow way, but they are crooked and wide. You must distinguish the right way from the wrong by paying attention to which is straight and narrow. Then, in my dream, I saw Christian ask Goodwill, "Can you help me off with this burden on my back?" For it was impossible for him to get rid of his burden without help. Goodwill told him, "As for your burden, be content to bear this load until you come to the place of deliverance, for there it will fall from your back of its own accord." Such news encouraged Christian, and he began to prepare himself and seriously consider the journey before him. Goodwill told him, "When you've traveled some distance from the gate, you will come to the house of the interpreter. Knock on his door, and he will show you excellent things." Christian didn't waste any time. He said goodbye to his new friend. Goodwill wished him traveling mercies and sent him on his way. Christian followed Goodwill's directions until he came to the house of the interpreter. He didn't hesitate to approach the door and knock. To his dismay, no one came to the door, so he knocked again and again. Finally, he heard footsteps from the other side of the door, and a man opened the door a crack. "Who's there?" Christian shuffled his weight from one foot to the other. "Sir, I'm a traveler who was advised by an acquaintance to call on the good man who lives here in this house for my benefit. So I'd like to speak with the master of the house, please." The man turned and called to the master of the house, who came to the door and asked Christian, "What is the reason for your visit?" "Sir," Christian began, "I'm a man who has traveled from the city of destruction, and I'm on my way to Mount Zion. I was told by the man who stands at the gate at the head of this way that if I called on you here at your home, that you would show me excellent things, things helpful to me on my journey." The interpreter opened the door wide. "By all means, come in." He ushered the pilgrim in with an inviting gesture. "I will show you things which will benefit you in your travels." With the glow of the flame casting a yellow puddle of light around them, the interpreter led the way and told Christian to follow him. The three of them stepped into a private room. "Open the door," the interpreter said to his helper. The man did as he was told. When the door opened, Christian saw upon the wall the picture of an important man wearing a very serious expression. His eyes were lifted up to heaven. The best of books, the Bible, was clenched in his hand. The law of truth was written upon his lips, and the world was behind him. A crown of gold hung above his head, and he stood like one pleading with men. Christian looked from the picture to the man of the house. "What does this mean?" the man answered while still looking at the picture. "The man pictured here is one of a thousand who can produce children and nurse them himself when they are born. Just as you see him with his eyes lifted toward heaven and holding the best of books in his hand with the law of truth written on his lips. This is to show you that his work is to know and unfold dark things to sinners. In the same way, notice how he stands pleading with men and how the world is cast behind him. See the crown which hangs over his head. These things are to show you that by despising the things in this present world and considering them less important, all for the love and devotion he has for his master's service, he is sure to have glory for his reward in the next world." The interpreter looked at Christian. "I have showed you this picture first because the man shown here is the only man whom the Lord of the place where you are going has authorized to be your guide. When you come across difficult situations in your journey, consider the things I have shown you. Think and ponder them so that if someone should meet you along the way and pretend to lead you along the right path, you will recognize that in reality their way would lead to death." Then he took him by the hand and led him into a very large parlor, full of dust, as if it had never been swept. The interpreter called to a man and told him to sweep. The man grabbed a broom and swept, and in so doing stirred a thick cloud of dust into the air. The dust grew so dense it almost choked Christian. The interpreter then spoke to a woman who stood nearby. "Bring some water here and sprinkle the room." The woman did as she was told, and the entire room was easily swept and cleaned. Christian asked, "Well, what does this mean?" The interpreter answered, "This parlor is the heart of a man who was never sanctified by the sweet grace of the gospel. The dust is his sin and inward corruption, which has defiled the whole man. The one who began to sweep at first is the law, but she who brought water and sprinkled it is the gospel. Now, while you saw the room fill with great clouds of dust when first swept, the dust flew about in such a way that the room could not be cleansed and its dust almost choked you. This is to show you that the law, instead of cleansing the heart from sin, does in fact arouse it and causes sin to flourish in the soul. For even as the law uncovers sin and forbids it, it does not provide the power to subdue it. In the same way, the woman you saw sprinkled the room with water, which made it easy to clean. This is to show you that when the gospel comes with its sweet and precious influences and indwells the heart, just like the dust settled by sprinkling the floor with water, sin is also vanquished and subdued and the soul made clean through faith. Consequently, the soul becomes a suitable place for the King of Glory to inhabit. Besides this, I saw in my dream the interpreter take Christian by the hand and lead him into a little room. Here two little children sat, each in their own chair. The name of the eldest was Passion, and the name of the other, Patience. Passion seemed to be very discontented, but patients remained quiet and calm. Christian asked, "What is the reason for Passion's unrest?" The interpreter answered, "The governor of these children would have him wait for the best things until the beginning of the next year, but he wants his inheritance now. Patience, however, is willing to wait." Then I saw a person come to Passion and bring him a bag of treasure. He poured it out at his feet. The eldest child scooped it up and rejoiced, and at the same time laughed with scorn at Patience. However, a short time later he had wasted all of his wealth and had nothing left but rags. Christian turned to the interpreter again and asked him to explain the meaning of these things more carefully. The interpreter said, "These two lads portray the passion of the men of this world and what is to come. Here you see Passion must have all of his inheritance this year, which represents his present world, for so are the men of this world. They must have all their good things now. They can't wait till next year, that is, until the next world, for their portion of good. The proverb, 'A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush,' holds more authority with them than all the divine testimonies of the good of the world to come. But as you saw for yourself, he quickly wasted it all and was left with nothing but rags. So will it be with all such men at the end of this world." Christian nodded. "Now I see that Patience has superior wisdom in many ways. First of all, because he waits for the best things. Second, because he will also have the glory of his inheritance when the other has nothing but rags." "Yes," the interpreter agreed, "but you may add another reason as well. It is the glory of the next world that will never wear out, while the good things of this world will vanish." Therefore, Passion had no reason to laugh at Patience, for he had his good things first. However, Patience will have the last laugh at Passion, for Patience eventually will receive his best things, which last forever. For he who is first must yield to the one who is last, because his good things vanish, while the one who is last will have his time to come, but gives place to nothing, for there is nothing to follow. He who has his inheritance first uses it and spends it, but he who has his portion last has it forever. Therefore it is said of the rich man, 'Remember that during your life you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus, bad things. But now he is being comforted here, and you are in agony.'" Luke 16, verse 25. "Then that means it is not good to crave things of the present world, but to wait for things to come," Christian said. "That is true. For we look not at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. However, even though this is true, since things of the here and now and our fleshly desires are so closely related to one another, and because things to come and our carnal desires are opposed to one another, it is the present things and fleshly desires with which we so quickly establish a relationship, while distance is maintained between our desires and the things to come." Then I saw in my dream that the interpreter took Christian by the hand and led him into a place where a fire burned in a fireplace on the wall. A man stood by it, continually throwing buckets of water on the flames, trying to quench it. However, the fire only burned higher and hotter. Again, Christian asked, "What does this mean?" The interpreter answered, "The fire is a work of grace that has been kindled in the heart. The man throwing water on it to extinguish and put it out is the devil. Even though he continues to pour water on the fire, you can see the fire burns higher and hotter. Let me show you the reason for this." The interpreter led Christian behind the wall to the other side of the fire, where he saw a man with a container of oil in his hand. The man continually poured oil from the container secretly into the fire. "What does this mean?" Christian asked. The interpreter answered, "This is Christ. who continually maintains the work already begun with the oil of grace in the heart. By this grace, in spite of what the devil can do, the souls of his people still prove to be gracious. The man you saw who stood behind the wall to maintain the fire, this is shown to teach you that it is hard for those who are tempted to understand how this work of grace is maintained in the soul. In my dream, I watched as the interpreter took Christian by the hand again and led him into a pleasant place where a beautiful, stately palace stood. Now Christian was greatly delighted when he saw the striking building, but he was even more impressed at the sight of people walking around the top of the palace dressed in gold. Christian looked wide-eyed at the interpreter and asked, "May we go inside?" Without a word, the interpreter led him closer to the door of the palace. A big group of men stood in a knot in front of the entrance. They all wanted to enter, but they seemed to lack the courage to do so. A little distance from the door, a man sat at a side table equipped with a book, his ink bottle, and a quill. His role was to take the names of those who were determined to enter the palace. Christian's attention drifted to men posted at the doorway, dressed in armor. They stood blocking the way, and their clear intent was to prevent those who wanted to enter from getting in, even if it required violence. Christian pondered the meaning of all this. Finally, when all the men cowered back away from the door for fear of the armed men, Christian spotted one man who appeared very resolute. He strode up to the man who sat at the table and said, "Sir, write down my name." As soon as the name was recorded in the book, the man drew his sword, put a helmet on his head, and rushed toward the palace door where the armed men opposed him with deadly force. But the valiant man was not discouraged at all, and fought fiercely, cutting and hacking his opponents. He both received and administered many wounds to those who attempted to keep him out. Nevertheless, he cut his way through them all and pressed forward into the palace. Those inside cried out with a joyous voice, even those who walked upon the top of the palace. They said, "Come in, come in, eternal glory you shall win." So he went in and was clothed with garments similar to those worn by the citizens of that palace. Christian smiled and said, "I think I certainly know the meaning of this. Now let me go forward." The interpreter shook his head. "No, you must wait until I have shown you a little more. After that, you will be on your way." The interpreter reached and took Christian by the hand again and led him into a very dark room where a man sat in an iron cage. The man appeared very sad. His eyes stared downcast at the ground, his hands folded with his fingers intertwined. He sighed as if his heart would break. Christian looked from the sad man to the interpreter. "What does this mean?" "Talk to him." The interpreter pointed to the man in the cage. Christian looked to the man and asked, "What are you doing here?" The man answered, "I am what I was not once." "What were you once?" The man said, "I was once an attractive and thriving professing Christian, both in my own eyes and in the eyes of others. I at one time was totally convinced I was on my way to the celestial city, but even had joyous thoughts about my arrival there." "Well, what are you now?" Christian asked. The man let out another sigh. "I am now a man of despair, and am held captive by it, just as this iron cage portrays. I cannot get out. Oh, how depressed I am now, because I cannot get out." "But what happened? How did you end up in this condition?" "I neglected to watch and be sober. I loosened the restraints that kept my lusts in check. I sinned against the light of the Word and the goodness of God." With each statement, his voice grew more troubled. "I have grieved the Spirit, and he is gone. I flirted with temptation and the devil came to me. I have provoked God to anger and he has left me. I have so hardened my heart that I cannot repent. Christian tore his eyes from the man in the cage and looked to the interpreter. Is there no hope for such a man as this? Ask him. The interpreter nodded toward the caged man. Christian did as the interpreter said, and he asked the man, do you have any hope that you will not be kept in the iron cage of despair? The man's eyes stared at the floor again. No, not at all. But why? Don't you know that the Son of the Blessed is very merciful and compassionate? I have crucified him again by my life. I have despised his person. I have despised his righteousness and regarded his blood as an unholy thing. I have acted spitefully to the Spirit of grace. Therefore, I have shut myself out of all the promises of God. Now there remains for me nothing but threats, dreadful threats, truthful threats of certain judgment, and fiery indignation which shall devour me as an enemy. Why? For what reasons did you bring yourself to this sorry condition? The man's eyes looked up for a moment. For the lusts, pleasures, and profits of this world. It was the lure of the enjoyment of these things that I promised myself increasing pleasure. His eyes dropped to stare at the floor again. But now every one of those things bites and snaps at me. They gnaw my soul like a burning worm. But can't you repent and turn from this despicable condition? The man shook his head slowly. No, for God has denied me repentance. His word gives me no encouragement to repent. Yes, he is the one who has shut me up in this iron cage. Even if all the men in the world try to let me out, they would not be able. Remember this man's misery, the interpreter warned Christian, and let his sorry state be an everlasting warning to you. Christian moistened his dry lips. Well, this is a most fearful situation. May God help me to watch and to be sober, and to pray that I may shun the cause of this man's misery. Sir, is it not time for me to go on my way now? For Christian was quite ready to put this experience behind him. Wait, just a little longer. I want to show you one more thing, and then you can go on your way. The interpreter took Christian by the hand again and led him into a bedchamber, where he saw a man getting out of bed. The man got dressed, but as he put on his clothes, he shook and trembled. Christian asked, why does this man tremble like this? The interpreter turned and asked the trembling man to explain the reason of his shaking. The shaking man said, this evening I was fast asleep. While I slept, I dreamed. In a dream, I saw the heavens grow extremely black. Lightning streaked across the sky, followed by a most fearful thunderclap. It was terribly frightening and distressing. So I looked up in my dream, and the clouds rolled across the sky at an unusually fast rate. Among the noise of the storm, I heard the great blast of a trumpet, and saw a man sitting upon a cloud served by thousands of heavenly beings in the midst of a flaming fire. Even the heavens were ablaze. A voice called out saying, arise, you who are dead, and come to judgment. And with that the rocks shattered, the graves opened, and the dead who were in them came forth. Some of them were ecstatic and looked upward with joy on their faces. But others cringed and tried to hide under the mountains. Then I saw the man who sat upon the cloud open the book. He invited all the world to draw near, but the fierce flame that surrounded him kept the people at a safe distance, much like the distance between a judge and prisoners at the bar in this world. Those who attended the man sitting on a cloud were ordered to gather together the tares, the chaff and stubble, and cast them into the burning lake. Just then the bottomless pit opened very near where I stood. Smoke billowed and spewed from the mouth of the pit, along with coals of fire and hideous noises. The heavenly attendants were commanded to gather my wheat into the storehouse. And with that I saw many caught up and carried away into the clouds, but I was left behind. I wanted to hide myself, but I couldn't, because the man who sat upon the cloud kept his eye on me. All my sins flooded into my mind, and my conscience accused me on every side. At this point I woke up. The shaking man's answer raised another question in Christian's mind, and he asked, "But what made you so afraid of what you saw?" "Why, I thought that the day of judgment had come," the man said, "and I was not ready for it. But the thing that frightened me most about it was that the angels gathered up several people around me and left me behind. Plus, the pit of hell opened its mouth just where I stood. And my conscience distressed me because the judge always kept his eyes focused on me with a look of angry disapproval upon his face." Then the interpreter said to Christian, "Have you considered all these things?" "Yes, and they challenged me with both hope and fear." "Well, keep all these things in mind, so they may prod you to move forward in the right direction," the interpreter said. Then Christian began to make serious preparation for moving forward on his journey. Then the interpreter said, "I pray the Comforter will always be with you, good Christian, to guide you in the way that leads to the celestial city." With that, Christian went on his way saying, "Here I have seen things rare and profitable, things pleasant and dreadful, things to make me not easily moved. Let me think on the things I have begun to accept and to understand the purpose for which they were shown me. And let me be thankful to you, good interpreter."